Hey folks, it's Harry from Slap Your Daddy Barbecue. I have some exciting news for you. You guys definitely have to tune in to the great guys, Jeff, and special guests, Doug and Leonard, on Baseball and Barbecue Podcast coming to you soon.
From the studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York, this is episode number 194 of Baseball and BBQ. I'm Jeff the Oku Cohen, and that guy over there is Leonard Hollywood Aberman, and we welcome you back to our show. Leonard.
Good day, mate.
Good day. Good day.
Good day. You know why I say that?
Why?
As we bring you episode 194, we went way around the globe to bring in two. They were wonderful guests. They've written a cookbook, and they are the Grill Sisters.
Oh,
Desi and Irene, with their cookbook, The Grill Sisters Guide to Legendary Barbecue, 60 irresistible recipes that guarantee mouth-watering, finger-licking results. They are our guests on this episode. If that's not enough, Jeff, we've got a very special guest. You know what makes the interview very special?
Not you.
That was such a lob. That was such a softball.
Well, and talk about softball. You know what you hit softballs with?
A bat.
A bat. Yes, we have Kirk Gross of Overfly Bat. And with me on the interview is Doug Rogue Cooker Shining.
But not me.
No, you were unavailable.
So then let me do my part and tell everyone that BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. And Jeff, I heard that interview, by the way, with you, Doug, and Kirk Gross. It was quite good.
Yeah, it was very, very good, yeah.
So that is going to be on episode 194. So we've got the Grill Sisters to kick it off. So let's welcome in the Grill Sisters as they join us from down under to talk about barbecue. There are some of you that are going to be when I say this, you're going to say, yep, that's exactly right. There's something very special about cookbooks. Audiobooks, you can't do it. You can't do PDFs on a laptop, on a tablet. Cookbooks, you've got to hold, you've got to flip the pages, you got to have them in your kitchen, and you have to have them in your collection. If you have a collection and you want a cookbook, our guests are going to be the ones that you're going to want to have. It is the Grill Sisters Guide to Legendary Barbecue. We are joined by Irene and Desi. They are the Grill Sisters. And I'll just read this from their book. It says, Irene and Desi are the Grill Sisters and have worked with hundreds of big brands around the world. They have appeared on Australian television, hosted the World Food Championships in Australia, and are both ambassadors for Australia's biggest barbecue retailer, Barbecues Galore. They both live in Melbourne, Australia, and they are kind enough to join us our evening, but their morning. And we can't be any happier to welcome them. So Desi and Irene, welcome to Baseball and barbecue.
Thank you.
So we're going to start in no specific order, but I'm going to start, Irene. I'm going to ask you that. I'm going to make a comment, first of all, because I've done a little research. So I do know that not only did you write the cookbook, both of you, but you also did all the photos.
Yes. Right?
And I don't know if you're very familiar with baseball, because we're baseball and barbecue. We don't have to talk baseball at all. But there's a player here called Shohei Ohtani, and he's very special because he does both. He hits and he pitches. And you are probably the Shohei Ohtani of cookbooks, because not only do you do the recipes, but you also do the photographs. So you do it all. If we could just comment on what it takes to put a book like this together.
Sure. We did the photography and we did the styling. We were working about 12 hours a day doing all the photos for a month. It took a lot of work, but we love working together. And yeah, it all came together with the styling, and it's exactly how we wanted it to look.
You know, Desi, yeah. I was looking at reading in the introduction that you were on the Channel 7's Mate Zippers Barbecue Back BBQ Wars, which I can get on YouTube. So I watched it. I watched a couple episodes, and I got to tell you, I loved the recipe for the lobster mac and cheese. That must have been so delicious. Can you tell us what went into that?
Yes, that was very delicious. We had quite a few cheeses go in there. There's some cream, butter. You had your macaroni and, of course, the grilled lobsters, which was totally delicious. That was definitely one of the winning dishes there.
Definitely watch it on YouTube, everybody. It's definitely worth it.
There's another video on YouTube that I just watched, and you guys are grilling. They were oysters. I've never seen oysters this size in my life. And there was also, what else? There were prawns. They were incredibly big. And there was something else that was just, like, I couldn't believe that. Like, everything, what is it? Everything in Australia huge? I mean, it was just, I couldn't believe it. All the ingredients. And you're making it when you're designing a cookbook like this, and you're coming up with a cookbook, do you have to think about not only the ingredients in Australia, but all over the world, because you want this to be a seller nationally or internationally? So, Irene, what do you consider when you're putting something like this together?
Yes, we had to take into account, you know, the things that we love as well, but yes, that are available, ingredients that are available all around the world, and also in the language that everyone around the world can relate to. Yeah, a lot went into it, but the video that you mentioned was when we cooked for Mark Wiens. So yes, we cooked octopus, we cooked oysters, all the surf and turf. And we've also cooked for Dave Chappelle. So we've been really lucky to do a lot of private VIP lunches for a lot of celebrities.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. Desi, I'm watching the videos. I noticed that you're wearing Team CBUS Super. What does that mean?
Oh, yes. Well, we're representing a company for Dippers. So the Dippers Barbecue Wars have got a few different companies. And they're all basically going to war with barbecue to see who will win at the end. So we're with that particular company.
Ah, okay.
Now, octopus, look, you have octopus in the book, and there are certain foods that are represented in different cultures. Like octopus is big in Greek foods. Matter of fact, we had someone on. He's a Greek chef here. And he told us the secret to tenderizing octopus. And I want to see, Desi and Irene, I'll start with Desi, what you think of this. He puts the octopus in a clothes dryer.
Oh, wow.
Now, how do you tenderize your octopus, Irene?
We usually use, it's all about massaging the octopus. We spend a bit of time, but also a mallet. But it's all about the cooking for us. A lot of people boil their octopus first. We don't. It's about cooking it until it's tender. And, yeah, so that's the secret. And I think we're one of the only ones that actually grill the octopus from the start. And you get that true flavour. A lot of people boil it, and we don't think you have the same sort of flavour. You want that char grill taste.
And Desi, what's your thoughts on tenderizing octopus?
You can also freeze octopus. And the best way to do it as well is if you marinate it and put some lemon juice in there as well before you put it into the freezer. So basically as it's freezing, it's tenderizing as well. And then when you take it out, it tenderizes also. I have heard of what you were saying. They also do put them in the washing machine apparently, or hit them against rocks. But definitely, you know, if you can't do that, you can put it in the freezer as well overnight.
Can you imagine the repairman you called? You call your Maytag repairman and he comes and he finds, well, there's the problem. You've got tentacles in your...
Yeah. But definitely anything citrusy like that will tenderize the octopus as well.
Yeah,
because that's part of our marinade as well, so it does tenderize it.
We're speaking to the Grill Sisters, who have written The Guide to Legendary Barbecue. One of the things that is great about this book is you can pick this book up and you have basically all, you can have a complete meal here. You've got your appetizer, your vegetable, your main course, and your dessert all in one book.
Now, that's right, Len. And also, which is unique to this book, which I haven't seen in many cookbooks, at the end, you have an essential rubs and sauces. I mean, we get, myself, I'm backyard barbecue, and I just get the rubs, and I just go, you know, go to a store, get a bottle of rub. But no, you show us how to make your own. I thought that was pretty cool. I'm going to try some of these.
Yes, thank you. We also wanted to incorporate grilling 101 tricks and tips, the ideal internal temperature for steak, for all different foods, also smoking woods, which ones to use. So it is a guide. It's something that you can take anywhere and everywhere and use it. It's got all that information in one.
So, Desi, with barbecue, what's one of the things that you get asked most often from novice, even people that have been doing it a while?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about too, Irene.
Yeah, it's how to cook that perfect steak. And that's why we included a lot of different methods. We were talking about this yesterday. It's such a coincidence a lot of those frequently asked questions are included in the book. But I would definitely think, as we were saying, Desi, the reverse sear of the steak, right? A lot of people ask about that, how to perfect the restaurant quality steak at home. And that's what we've made sure that we've included in the book.
Yeah, we get asked a lot. And again, you know, everybody thinks because we have a podcast, you know, for baseball and barbecue, that we're experts on both subjects. The truth is we enjoy both subjects, but that's it. We enjoy them. And we get to talk to people like you that are considered experts. But we get asked a lot about the woods. What wood should I use for pork, or what's good for, should I be using mesquite? I have this bag and I don't know what to do with it. Do you get asked that a lot?
Yes, we do. I think our favorites are the apple and the maple because they're so versatile. Yeah, we do get asked. That's why we included it in the book. We thought it was really important to have a section there that incorporated, so many of those questions.
You eat with your eyes. And in that case, I could basically put this book on a plate and just...
I'm looking at page 87 with this beautiful seafood paella, and this is just beautiful the way it's presented. And I wish I can taste it. I know it would be delicious. Paella is one of my favorite dishes, but I'd be scared to try that on a barbecue. Desi, is it difficult to make on a barbecue?
It's not difficult to make on a barbecue. It's just you have to basically be there while you're cooking it, like you would on the stove. Right. And it's basically nearly the same sort of method. So it's direct and you're just cooking your rice, cooking your seafood, adding your wine, your stock, and just keep mixing. And then you do cover it a little bit as well. But it's not hard to make as long as you're sort of looking after it, definitely. That's a good thing about the barbecue as well. It's great cooking it outdoors. It's just the aromas are just incredible. And then you get everyone coming around to have a look and taste. It's definitely a nice one.
On a barbecue, I guess the only thing is, you know, if you're doing it on your stove, you can control the temperature a little better than you could on the barbecue. But the good thing is, I was noticing a lot of these recipes are perfect for someone that, let's say they live in the city and they can't grill. But this is really a cookbook that can be used indoors as well. Many of the recipes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Irene, do you have a favorite grill to use, manufacturer? Is it smoking? Is it a barbecue? Is it grilling? Is any particular grill you like, pellets? Or, you know, what's your favorite tool to use?
Yeah, I think every barbecue has its purpose. So I'm not one of these people that will say no gas and no pellets, because I love my Traeger just as much as I love my kettle that I use for charcoal and my gas. So I don't know. I think I love charcoal grilling. I really do. But, yeah, my Traeger is perfect. I love it. You know, you get – yeah, what's your favorite? What do you enjoy?
I do enjoy using my Traeger.
And gas, but that's why we sort of incorporated every kind of grill. And as you said, you know, you can cook indoors with these recipes as well. That's the beauty of the recipes that we've included.
When we're going to have barbecue book authors, or, you know, cookbook authors on, I like to try and make a couple of the dishes before they come on, and I will tell you that your char-grilled bell peppers with walnuts, feta, and honey dressing was perfect, because I was looking for a vegetable dish. Sometimes it's tough. You know, barbecue, the protein is always easy. It's vegetables. Sometimes your side dishes, you don't want to just keep making the same side. So I made that dish. It was delicious. It was really delicious. Not difficult at all, too. I picked it because I thought... It seems I had the ingredients in the house, and I have to tell you, it's really very, very good.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You are welcome.
And I got a request for making some short ribs for my parents. So I'm going to use your beef short ribs recipe, because this looks absolutely fantastic.
Please do. And a lot of people love the rub that we've included in that, the recipe. Try and use that rub as well.
Okay.
And the sauce. It's beautiful. Yes. Let us know how you go. But we've had really, really good feedback.
Desi, were there ingredients that maybe you use in Australia that you weren't too sure are ingredients that are used in other parts of the world that maybe you couldn't use, or you had to find substitutes for? Did that happen?
Not really, not with these. Obviously, the wording might be slightly different. Like, our coriander is cilantro and things like that. But otherwise, no. Most of the spices, well, all of the spices are available all around the world. So we didn't really have any issue with any of the ingredients, which was very fortunate.
Now tell us about you guys. How did you become the Grill Sisters?
Irene.
I'm sorry, I should say. Okay, you know what? Irene, you start with that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we were brought up by our mother, and we had there's four sisters all together. So our mum was a single mom growing up. We had to cook whilst she went to work. So we really learnt from a young age that we needed to find ingredients that didn't cost a lot of money and create recipes. So we've been cooking from, how old is he? Probably 5 years old, even younger. And then outdoors, when did we start grilling outdoors. It was,
I think, around, it was around nine when we started cooking the octopus.
Yeah.
Because we bought a tiny little foil grill with some charcoal, which was very cheap back then. That's all we could afford. And we lit it up and started cooking on that, and that was just very exciting. So basically from there, from very, very young age, because it was, like Irene said, it was hard. Our mum was working three jobs just to, you know, to keep us and give us everything we could to provide for us. And she was always at work. So we had to do things. We were the two eldest. I was the eldest and Irene. So we had to cook and have food for the family.
So now when you're cooking for the family, your two younger sisters come over and your mom, and you two are the stars. You're the one who expected to do the cooking, correct?
Yes, that's true. We started off with that. Yeah, we started off with that tiny little $10 grill to now we've got nearly, 20 grills each. And, yes, it's big, big grilling family feasts with the family. It's good.
You know, I said at the beginning how, but to do all the things well for the cookbook, the recipes, the layout, the pictures, was quite a feat. We had on a photographer, Ken Goodman, who talked about photographing food. And people think that, some people, that, you just take a picture of food and that's it. And he would talk about how if he was taking a picture of a steak and he wanted to have a steak that was cooked at a certain temperature, he wanted that steak to be at that temperature because it had a certain appearance. Now, I don't know what your background is as far as photographing food, but these pictures are incredible. So how did you get yourselves, is it just a skill that you have, or how did you get yourselves where you can take such beautiful pictures of food?
We're self-taught. With this cookbook, we created and built a photography studio. We learnt how to operate a professional camera, not just our phones, lighting, all of that. We took all of that into account. It was a lot of work, but we're just so happy with the, with the results. And Page Street Publishing was so good. They guided us as well as to what they really wanted. And we made sure that we perfected that. But yes, we're self-taught.
I'm going to start with Desi on this one. Let's get serious for a second. Here in the United States, and thankfully this is changing, I think you'd agree. Pitmasters, it used to be a male-dominated field, or at least that was the attitude. Not only pitmasters, talking about barbecuing. It seemed to always be, the father, goes out and does the grilling. And that has definitely changed for the better. How is that in Australia? So we'll start with Desi. Do you guys find it, do people act shocked when they see that, the Grill Sisters and you guys are darn good cooks and barbecue cooks?
Look, it's definitely the same here in Australia, especially, in the European background too. They all expect the women in the kitchen making the salads, not really expecting the women outside actually doing the barbecue. So it's definitely very similar here. But you know what? We love barbecue, and it's such a healthy option as well. But definitely, we're out there, especially where, like Irene said, we're ambassadors for barbecues galore. And that's what we want to show as well, that, women do barbecue. So more women need to be out there barbecuing, not just making salads or side dishes. Yeah.
What about you, Irene? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, really important. And I think if more women knew how there's less cleaning up using a barbecue. I mean, we grill 7 days a week and it's just so convenient. But yeah, we're really happy to see that we've inspired a lot of women around the world and men to get out there and cook outdoors. But I agree with what Desi said. Yeah.
When are you going to bring your barbecuing skills to the United States?
Oh, we visited the U.S. a fair bit. We love the U.S. And go the Mariners, let me just say. Yes.
Okay.
With baseball.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yes, yes. We need to plan a trip where we just need to get round. We've got a lot of book signings here. We need to do all that. Hopefully in the new year we'll get out there and see a lot of our amazing followers, because we've got a lot of support in the US, which we really, really appreciate.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't tell everybody that you can follow the Grill Sisters, both Irene and Desi, on Instagram. They actually have, I think, at least three accounts, one with both of them, the Grill Sisters, and then each have a separate account. Desi has Healthy Cook 4 Champions with the number 4, and Irene has Come Grill With Me. Anything else? Yes. I'm looking. It's just fantastic. And anything else do you have that you want to tell people about your social media?
Oh, I think it's the same for both of us. We've got TikTok, we've got Facebook, all the socials, Twitter as well. Yeah, and my website too, where you can get a signed copy as well of our cookbook.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so anyone that purchases one of our cookbooks, if they let us know and DM us, we can actually send a signed book plate and a little thank you card to them as well for their book, and then they can just stick it into their book.
Now, yeah. Desi.
I don't know if you can see it. Oh, no,
yep,
it's a book
plate. Yep, I see it. Yep.
There we go. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll send them around the world free of charge. If you've purchased a book anywhere, we'll send you one.
Oh, that's great. Oh.
Irene, you mentioned the Mariners. Now I'm just out of curiosity. You're in Australia. You know, I never assume, and this is not male, female. It's just you're in Australia. I don't know, you know, what you guys know about baseball or not. You know, I never assume anything. But you mentioned the Mariners. Why? I'm just curious. Why is that the team?
Well, Seattle Mariners. When I was in high school, I was an exchange student in Seattle. And my host family, which they're gorgeous people, and I still keep in contact with them, they love the Mariners. And I've always always looked out to see, because baseball's not very big here. But
right.
Whenever I get a chance, you know, it's sort of, yeah, I was in high school when I first went to my first game. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Len, you know, Australia was in the World Baseball Classic, so I think it's getting a little bit bigger in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I was thinking about the book, I don't know why it struck me when, as I said, that you did both. And I thought about the Shohei Ohtani, and I thought, is that going to be wasted? Is that going to not be understood? And I, but I said, what the heck? I'm going to use it anyway. But so do you guys know who Shohei Ohtani is?
Heard of him, but not a lot. Yeah.
So, that's okay. That's okay. All right. What's the big sport in Australia? Is it rugby in Australia? Is it soccer or football?
It's football.
AFL.
Cricket.
Football. Yeah, AFL football.
And cricket.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're going to be Desi. You're going to be barbecuing for a cricket team. What recipe are you going to be using out of your book here to feed a whole team?
Oh, wow. There's so many beautiful recipes here.
Yeah.
I would say probably definitely the sticky ribs.
Uh-huh.
And the lamb roast, Irene.
Yes, definitely.
Now, also, we mentioned octopus, which is used in many cultures. And the one other food that I thought of, not really many cultures, but brisket. You know, there's Jewish brisket, and which is eaten a lot around the holidays in the United States, and it's a sweet brisket, whereas you have Texas brisket, which is is the pepper and salt and garlic, basically. Did you find, as you were doing this book, and I will ask this to Desi, did you find that there was perhaps a food was multicultural besides octopus?
Oh, definitely the prawns.
Yes, okay. They're eaten everywhere, right?
Definitely, yes. And also the chicken. our chicken Caesar salad. Quite a few in there.
Irene, do you have a favorite recipe in this book? You have one that stands out that you really like?
It's so hard to choose one, but I love the prawn and the calamari, the grilled salad, but I love our burgers as well. I love the ribs. That's why I really want you to try the beef ribs, because that is definitely my favorite. I've got too many favorites. it's a really, and the brownies, I think, the dessert, that's a favorite. Yeah. And the our custard dessert too. Yeah, too many to choose.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Irene, was it tough to get down to 60 recipes? Did you have a lot you left on the cutting room floor?
Yes, we've got heaps more. We've got so many more but we had to bring it down to 60. But you never know what the future holds. We might be able to release those as well, we're hoping. Yeah, there's lots more. It was hard, but we're happy with the selection.
It's a fantastic book. It's called The Grill Sisters Guide to Legendary Barbecue. We're here with Irene Sharp and Desi. I'm sorry, Desi, could you pronounce your last name again, please?
Longanides,
thank you. And you can get it on Amazon, but you can probably get it somewhere else. So, Irene, why don't you tell us where we can pick up the book here in the United States or anywhere around the world?
There's a lot of bookshops actually in the US that are stocking it. Amazon, there's a lot of places you can purchase. Just Google it, it's there. Even my website, comegrillwithme.com, there's signed copies. So you can purchase it there, but go to your local bookstore. If they don't have it, please ask them to get it in. But, yeah, I know in Seattle a bookshop contacted us. There's a lot that have actually got it in stock.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Amazon's next day delivery.
Right.
Even in Canada and everywhere, yeah.
And I think it's Indigo as well in Canada.
Yeah.
But definitely Amazon all around the world. Definitely has it.
Are you enjoying the book tour?
Yeah, we are. We're enjoying it. We're trying to get everything in. It's really hard to try and get it all in and at the same time keep up with all. We're continuing the content for our pages as well. So sort of balancing everything. But we're trying to get out there.
Now, I was going to say, how is it dealing with it? Because you're doing a lot of promotions and you're dealing with other countries. How is it dealing with the time difference?
A bit tricky sometimes because some of them are in our middle of the night, but we do manage to get through them.
That's good. We knew we had a time difference. We actually interviewed Ben Arnault from Smoking Hot Confession. So we knew to have it on our night, your morning, to make this work. Best for everybody.
Thank you. That was really, really nice.
Very thoughtful. Yeah.
Now you have the rest of your day.
Yes.
Enjoy. It's a weekend. Are you doing more promotions today?
Today is our family day. My son's playing basketball semifinals today. Nice. Tomorrow we're doing more promotions. How about you, Desi?
I'm the same. I'm working today and then tomorrow we're doing some more promotions together.
Well, excellent. It's an excellent book, everybody. It's mouth-watering just looking at the pictures. I'm going to try that beef rib recipe, Irene. I promise you that. It's called The Grill Sisters Guide to Legendary BBQ, and we wish you all the best with it. Please go to Amazon, go to your local bookstore, F for it. Go to your website is Come Cook With Me?
Come Grill With Me.
ComeGrillWithMe.com. Is it .com? Yeah. Or is it?
Yes, .com.
And Desi, do you have anything you ever want to promote?
No, basically that's it. Definitely go to Irene's website. That's where you'll get a signed copy. If not, with Amazon, let us know and we'll give you the signed book plate.
And check them out on YouTube.
We wish you guys.
And Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. We wish you tons of success with this. It is beautiful. And I could see collectors of cookbooks, anyone who I showed this today to someone. They actually said to me, they said, oh, could I take this home over the weekend? And I said, no, I need it. I'm interviewing them tonight. I'm sorry. They were like, so they said, so can you bring it on Monday? said, no, I'm afraid I might not get it back.
They have to order their own, Lynn.
Exactly. It's like, wait, I'm not a, you know, this is mine.
Right. Thank you, Desi. Thank you, Irene. Thank this was really
so
great
much.
And appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast. And if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Lynn. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
And we want to thank Irene and Desi for joining us on Baseball and BBQ. They were terrific, weren't they, Len?
They were absolutely terrific. And if you don't believe that they are the real deal, and I don't know why you wouldn't, but there's a video of them, I believe on YouTube or something, where they are cooking. Is everything bigger in Australia? Because they have some meats and fish and things that they're cooking you cannot get here because we don't have the space for it.
Even their shrimp is jumbo.
Exactly. They're amazing. We thank them for joining us. The way we had to coordinate it, it was our evening, their morning. And we also want to tell everyone to go to baseball.bbq.com. Jeff, you like how I said that a little? Baseball.bbq.com.
Professional there.
I emphasized. But no, seriously, baseball.bbq.com. It is grilling tools and accessories. If you haven't been to their site, I don't know why not. It doesn't cost you anything to go there. I think the problem is once you go to baseball.bbq.com, you're going to want one of everything. I know I do. And why not? Cutting boards, spatulas, tongs. They even have the thing to take the big pieces of meat off.
Pigtail.
Thank you very much. They have everything. And you can get it engraved in with whatever you want on there. So go to baseballbbq.com. And now, Jeff.
I want to tell everybody, too, if they want to get in touch with the show, call us at 516-855-8214. Email us at baseballandbbq@gmail.com. We have a Twitter page at baseballandbbq. Leave a comment on our Facebook, baseballandbbq. Instagram, baseballandbarbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. Our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Please rate, review, subscribe, and all that stuff. And Len, I'm not sure. Do you want to do a threads thing with social media now? That's new.
I guess we're going to have to, right? We don't have one. We better get one quickly because the kids, they're all doing it.
Yeah, I know, right?
And Jeff, come on, get ready. Give it to us. We're ready. I've got it. I'm set.
Go ahead.
Quote of the week.
Barbecue. It's not just a meal. It's a ritual. And that was said by Ed Mitchell.
Oh, there you go. Short and sweet.
And to the point.
That's right. And Len? You know, I just want to say we're recording this, full disclosure, on July 11th, 7-Eleven Day, for everybody who wants to get a Slurpee. But it's also the All-Star Game. So I have something that's been bothering me. I might have to rant a little about it.
Ooh, wait a minute. This is not even you. We didn't even discuss this. This is, but can I, Jeff, please?
Sure, go ahead. It's going to be a short rant, though.
Well, that's okay. People miss your rants, so we haven't had one in a while. Here we go. Baseball rant.
You know, we're in 2023, and you know, look, we know money, it drives everything, right, Len? Money is the root of all evil, but it really, really, in the All-Star game, remember in the old days, and I hate to sound like get off my grass, old man type of guy, but... You know, the players, they wore their own uniforms. You know, the home team in the American League part, they wore their American League home uniform, and the visitors in the National League would wear their away, but their own uniforms, like the Mets, mm-hmm. Dodgers, Nationals, whatever. Right. Not anymore. I mean, they have to wear these bland uniforms from Nike because Nike has to control everything. because they're spending all this money on the All-Star game. They get to pick the uniforms, and it's not fun anymore. I mean, it was great to see. And look, I know I'm going back, but it was great to see Roberto Clemente in a Pirate uniform and you know, throwing it to Steve Garvey in a Dodge uniform, you know? It's not happening today. Everything has to be so homogeneous instead of, you know, being some fun. And, you know, and look, I know the All-Star game isn't the All-Star game like it used to be. Now it's just, look, get our bonus payment and go home. It's not like the used to, but that's not the point. The point is those uniforms are hideous. Hideous uniforms. That's all I had to say.
Okay. You know what? I agree with you as far as I'm not saying whether the uniforms are hideous, but I remember as a kid, you look for your uniform because what does Jerry Seinfeld say? You root for the laundry.
That's right.
Right. And you'd look for your representative. Now, I guess if you know what Pete Alonso looks like, because he's the Met representative, although Cody Senga is also now, you look for them. But again, you're right. It was nice to see each team represented by their uniform. I agree with you. I think it's ridiculous that you have to do the same uniform. I mean, what are they? What are they? The Cub Scouts, the Boy Scouts, everybody has to be in the same khaki.
I wonder if they're wearing the same, if their own logo caps, or they're wearing a National League cap and like the logo on the side, you know, saying NY or LA or CR for Colorado or something. That's a good question. I mean, I'm not watching the game because we're recording, but
I wonder what. And you know what, Jeff? We talked about this as far as which we minded missing more. And we prefer, you and I prefer, the home run derby to the All-Star game.
Yeah. And you know what they use in old home run derby? Bats. And so let's get to our interview with Kirk Gross and special guest Doug Scheiding with Overfly Bats. Pinch hitting for Leonard Averman today is none other than the longest running guest host of the Baseball and BBQ podcast. Leonard, as we say, is on assignment. So I'm glad to be joined by Doug Rogue Cookers Scheiding. And let's talk about bats. There are many kinds of bats for all levels of use. Wood, aluminum, composite. The most popular bat company is, of course, Louisville Slugger. Other companies make bats such as Easton, Chandler, and many others. Today, we have a baseball bat manufacturer from Overfly Sports who recently acquired the Powerball Bat Company, whose co-owner is here with us on Baseball and BBQ. He has been manufacturing bats for the professional and youth baseball around the world since 2016. So we welcome to Baseball and BBQ, Kirk Gross of Overfly Sports. Welcome, Kirk.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Great to be on. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. As one Texan to another, we got to watch out for each other. So I'm actually in San Antonio, Texas. So
absolutely.
Yeah, and I grew up in Clovis, New Mexico, so which is just like El Paso. But as a guest co-host, I get to open up as lead off. So I kind of wanted I tried to do a little research, but I want to hear it from you. Let's start from the beginning and your love and connection to baseball, just to start off there.
Sure. I have always loved the game of baseball. I grew up a Mets fan. So I grew up on the West Coast of Florida. We had WWOR. So it was either the Mets. We also had the Braves, TBS, and we had WGN in the Cubs. So I grew up a Mets fan, and with my dad, you know, taking us to, you know, out of school a couple times during spring training every year. And my brothers and my dad and I would sneak off to a game, and, you know, just my love for baseball grew out of that. And my dad's love, he grew up in New York, so he was a big Yankees fan. And so he was a little upset when we became Mets fans, but he understood, and, you know, he shared his love for the game with us.
I know exactly how he feels. I'm a big Mets fan, and my son grew up a Yankee fan.
Yeah, so I know exactly. The reverse. But I, you know, people always ask me now, it's like, well, who's your favorite team? And that's an easy question. We root for whoever's swinging our bats, so that makes it super easy for us. You know?
That's exactly right.
And good answer.
Yeah, and looking around, I see Manny Machado is a user of the bat, and Ronald Acuna Jr., and Joey Meneses. Is that right?
Yeah, so Acuna, no, but Manny Machado does use the bats. Joey Meneses has used the bats. he doesn't use them at this current time. You know, some players, baseball is a very superstitious thing. Players like to switch bats and models, and that's, you know, good and bad for a bat maker. There's always opportunities out there, but you also, you know, hate when one of your players that you've invested in picks up a different bat company, but that's just part of the business too.
Right. Well, it's always the bat's fault when they're exactly. not doing it. Yeah. Right? It's absolutely. Never the player's fault.
It's never the player. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, I have two boys myself. One's a college pitcher, so he doesn't even use bats anymore. And I have my other son, my youngest son, is a freshman or soon to be sophomore in high school. He's a two-way player, so he pitches and hits. So, you know, my love for baseball beyond, if I'm not in the shop making bats, I'm on a youth field watching my boys or watching my son pitch.
Did you play growing up then too?
I did not play. I loved it. I dabbled with it a little bit, but I grew up playing soccer and was a pretty accomplished soccer player. So I never really had time for baseball. I tried a couple seasons and was, you know, decent at it, but soccer always seemed to get in the way. So, you know, I guess I just never really had the opportunity to play.
Well, I find it funny that you're a Mets fan because, you know, Lynn and Jeff are huge Mets fans.
That's you gotta believe.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
I've got my no hitter hat when Johan did the no hitter against the St. Louis Cardinals. So I was at that game. So that's one of the reasons that they allow me to be on the show because I'm actually a Cubs fan.
But, gotcha. Yeah, I grew up a Mets fan. So my favorite, you know, in the 80s, obviously in the World Series in 86, you know, rooting for Gary Carter and Keith Hernandez. But then all, you know, my favorite player on the team was actually a pitcher. Roger McDowell was just a character and loved watching him pitch. So, back then it was at a time where the players you got to know the players, you know, you wrote letters and sent baseball cards to them and, you know, got autographs back and that kind of stuff. And, you know, they were approachable back then for sure.
So Kurt, how did you get into the bat business?
Yeah, a great question. So when my oldest son was in high school, he's now just a pitcher, but he was an outfielder and a pitcher at the time, and he needed some bats. And I met my soon-to-be partner, Raul Salazar, who owned Powerball Bats. So in the introduction, you had it just backwards. It was flipped. So okay. Raul had a company called Powerball Bat Company, and they were based out of Chihuahua, Mexico. And Raul went to the same high school as I did and as my son was playing for. And he showed up one day with a case of bats, and my son needed a couple bats. So I bought a couple, and they were great bats. So I next time I saw him, I said, hey, tell me a little bit more about the company. So we got into it, and his vision was to, you know, he had been making bats since 2003 in Mexico for some of the professional leagues, the Liga Mexicana, Liga Pacifico. In Mexico. And so, but his vision was to bring it to the US and get his MLB license and everything else. But he had, you know, zero knowledge of how things in the United States worked. His only reference was how things were done in Mexico. And they don't have any, as you can imagine, don't have any guidelines in terms of, you know, restrictions on bats or the type of wood or where it comes from and how it's treated and all that kind of stuff. And MLB has, you know, 19 pages of rules and regulations that you have to agree to follow to be an MLB certified, you know, bat supplier. So talked to Raul and I had more money than brain. And I said, hey, let's see if we can partner up and, you know, and do this, bring it to the United States and get our MLB license. And I think I have less money and less brain now than I did back then, but that's how it started. So we teamed up. I owned half the company at that time. We moved the operation to the United States and started, got our MLB license the very next year in 19. So that was 2018. 19, we had our MLB license and then operated as Powerball Bat Company out of El Paso here, downtown El Paso, which is a great place to make bats and manufacture bats for a number of reasons. But then after a couple of years in it, it's a hard lifestyle, to be perfectly honest. It's a lot of it's a labor of love for sure. Raul had been doing it for, you know, 20 years, and he he wanted to kind of get out of the business and do something different. While at the same time, I had just, you know, kind of gotten into it and invested a significant amount of money to get things started and up and running. About the same time, we had been approached by a couple other bat manufacturers. They had seen our bats and, you know, we were emerging on the scene and, you know, who are these Powerball guys? And they asked us about acquiring us, and Raul wanted to get out of the business. So we talked to a couple, and Overfly happened to be one of the companies that we spoke with. And we were familiar with Overfly because they're based out of Mexico as well. And while we were really making strides in the professional rankings here, MLB and MILB in the US side, they were really taking the Mexican leagues by storm. They got their MLB license, Overfly did, in 2018, just like we did. You know, things just kind of, talks continued to, you know, mature, and it just turned out to be a really good fit for both of us. So January 1st of this year, we made the conversion and officially became part of Overfly Sports. And now it's kind of the best of both worlds. You know, I had been, we had been working Powerball on a lot of minor league, you know, emerging players. It's hard to just walk into a clubhouse and get a superstar and say, hey, try our bat. You know, they don't know anything about us. And, you know, whether they have contracts with other bat companies, whatever the case may be, it was, you know, that's a hard way to go about doing it. But so we started investing in the minor league players. We speak Spanish, so that's a huge benefit. A lot of bat manufacturers do not have Spanish speakers on staff. So when we go in and can speak Spanish to the Latin players, that means a lot to them and to us, quite honestly. So that was an advantage. And just culturally, it was a good fit with Overfly. They're a family-owned business, just like we were, and, you know, small enough and really take quality to heart. Value-wise, we had the same, you know, kind of value. So it was a good fit. So January 1st, we became part of Overfly and just running and gunning from there.
Fantastic. So, and they have I saw somewhere where they have an office in California. Is it La Jolla, California?
Yeah, they had an office in California. They have since closed that. That was when they were first emerging. And so, you know, while we, you know, as you kind of navigate crossing into the United States, California obviously is a way to do it. And through El Paso is a way. And it just made sense at the time when Overfly started, it made sense to have an office in California. But we've since now just have the office in Los Mochis, Mexico, where the big production facility is for Overfly, and here in El Paso.
Okay. And then in El Paso, is that where you lived, or did you pick El Paso? Okay. So you were there.
No, I lived in El Paso. So when I met Raul Salazar at that high school, it was in El Paso, Texas. I lived here, so it was much easier for me to start the business here. You know, all the typical things that you have to do, that get a bank account and get your sales tax certificate and all that, all the business side of things was much easier to do in the city in which I live. So when we embarked on that, we made the decision to move forward and I got involved. Raul wanted to do it in El Paso as well. So we looked at, I was very specific about the space that we wanted, and we lease a big warehouse building in downtown El Paso, a 5-minute walk from the San Diego Padres AAA affiliate, the El Paso.
Yeah, Chihuahua. The Chihuahuas, right?
Yeah. So from our door at the shop to home plates, 5-minute walk.
Ah, okay.
There's a brewery across the street. If you stop at the brewery and then go, it could be a couple hours. But if you make a straight shot at it, it's 5-minute walk. So we have a lot of players come through who happen to be in town, you know, to play the Chihuahuas and the Chihuahuas players as well.
Right. You make bats for all levels. It's not just professional level. You go from youth levels all the way to the professional levels, right? And worldwide.
Yeah, absolutely. We had, we make them from, you know, as small as like 27 inch bats, you know, the very young youth player to, you know, like my son who's 15 and through high school. That's really where, and you've probably heard it a million times, you know, it's good for kids to start swinging a wood bat, understand, you know, what the sweet spot feels like, because the way, you know, the composite bats are made, they're very forgiving. So you can miss hit a ball very easily and hit it a long way. With a wood bat, you really know what it means to hit the sweet spot. So we really work with players very young. We encourage them to start swinging wood early. at that age, they're really not going to break a lot of bats. It's not until the high school level. I was at a tournament this weekend, and my 15-year-old has been blessed with my height, so he's not a very tall individual. But at 15, he was facing a kid that was 6'3", 215, you know, who's throwing 90 miles an hour off the mound. And at that point, you'll start breaking bats. But you get to be a very good hitter when you use bats and practice with wood bats. So we start there and then make them all the way up for, you know, obviously Major League Baseball and the affiliated programs, affiliated baseball. And then, like you mentioned, all over the world, we had a great, kind of a unique experience with the World Baseball Classic this year. We had a few guys swinging our bats during that tournament. And kind of interestingly, Lars Nootbaar is one of the players that swings our bats. And as you probably know, he played for Team Japan. Mm-hmm. Lars in the same game, because we had our, it's a different, it's governed by MLB, but it was for a different time period. So Powerball was grandfathered into the WBC, and Overfly was obviously had their licensure as well. So in the same game, Lars Nootbaar swung a Powerball bat and won at bat, and then came up later in the game and swung the same model made by Overfly with that. So that was kind of cool to see. Absolutely. But things really took off in Japan with his, you know, notoriety in the country Japan, and then Ha-Sung Kim swung our bats for Korea. And we sell a lot of bats in Korea, you know, due to his popularity and taking care of him as well.
Now, what's the difference between a, you know, a pro bat used by the professionals and, you know, a high school kid or, you know, I guess travel leagues and things like that?
Yeah, the obvious answer is the size of the bat, right? So people always think, I mean, they've heard stories of Babe Ruth swinging a 36-inch bat or, you know, who knows how much it weighed. I mean, you hear all kinds of stories of that. The average bat that we make for the pro players, 33.5 inches. And so the size of the bat for like a high school kid usually will swing, you know, if he's a freshman, maybe even a 31, 31 and a half. 32 up to 33. And then if you're 6'3", 215, you swing whatever you want as a kid. You're strong, big enough and strong enough to do that. But there's all different kinds of models. So I don't know if you can see behind me, but there's a wall full of bats and different models. And basically the profile, if you're just looking at the outline or silhouette of a bat, each model is a different, unique shape and size, right? So we have over 250 different models, and that's only gotten as the world we live in, everything's personalized. You know, every player wants his unique little spin off of what may be a, you know, a traditional model that's been used for 70, 80 years, whatever. Make the handle, you know, a tenth of a millimeter smaller, and now that's a different model, right? Because it's different. And the nuances are literally just that. It could be a tenth of a millimeter here, a tenth of an ounce on the weight of the bat, or how deep it's cupped, whatever it is. Players definitely, I mean, I know I can feel it when it's on the lathe. I can tell the difference of a tenth of a millimeter. And so if I can feel it, definitely, you know, a professional player can feel it too.
Interesting, because I read that Raul Salazar, who was also, I don't know if he played minor league or in Liga Mexicana, but I think he started off in 2003, and he said ability to craft bats specifically to each player's desired specifications, and it was the feeling, and he would interact with them, and since he played baseball, I guess he used some of that experience of the feel of the bat. Is that kind of how it started, and did he teach you some of those secrets?
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. I mean, I'm nowhere near a professional player, not even close. I throw some mean, you know, batting practice. That's about it. But when you feel a bat, you just, you know, something comes alive when you feel it off the lathe, and it's like, man, this thing's ready to do some damage. And the players see it too. Like when we meet with players, whether it's in spring training or here in the shop or in our cages, you know, you hand over the bat off the lathe and they'll give you that, we call it the evil smile, right? They just grab the bat and they're like, ooh, this is going to do some damage. And you know, you've done well when you get that evil smile.
But how do you approach a professional player, like you said, Lars Nootbaar, you know, with your bat? You just send them a couple of samples and then he places an order, and, you know, I guess there's a, you give them for free, or is there some type of agreement going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it typically does start with a sample or two, but not always. So it happens in different ways. You know, in the case of Lars Nupar, we had a friend in common. He happened to mention, "Oh, yeah, Lars Nupar is a friend of mine." I said, "Oh, really? Let me reach out to him if that's okay. I'll tell him that we know each other and see if he'd like to swing our wood." And so that's exactly how that started. So we sent Lars a couple samples. It just happened to be perfect timing. He had been struggling a little bit, and when he got our bats, it just kind of turned on from there. And he's been using them, you know, religiously ever since. It's also a level of service that you have to provide and some honesty. I'd like to say, as a small bat company, I'd like to say that, you know, we could make bats for anyone and however many you need. And that's just not the reality. You know, we're constantly dealing with supply chain issues in terms of the wood. Kind of a little secret, every bat company gets their wood from the same mill. And so we're all fighting for the same wood. It all comes out of upstate New York, and they get it from a 300-mile radius. So, you know, we're all fighting for the same product, and, you know, COVID complicated things. But yeah, I mean, that's basically how it works. We'll get samples in a player's hand. You know, in like Nupar's case, he was obviously in St. Louis, and so we shipped him there. I didn't meet Lars until just this past spring training, to be honest, in person. We talked on the phone and that kind of stuff, but it wasn't until the spring training. It was kind of a funny story, but that I met him in person. Now, the other side of it is, you know, we work with agents too. And so agents will, a lot of times if agents are coming, have players in AAA, they're coming through El Paso to play the Chihuahuas. They're like, "Hey, can I send my guy down? He wants to, you know, we're struggling with bats and maybe a different model would do him well." And yeah, sure. So, you know, a player like Brian De La Cruz for the Marlins, that's exactly how that happened. He was coming through. He was in the Astros farm system at the time, came through, speak the language, talked to him, gave him a sample bat. He happened to hit a home run with it against the Chihuahuas. So while the Chihuahuas are great friends of ours, you know, if we have bats in the opposition's hands, you know, it's okay if they go to town here too. Players love playing in El Paso for a lot of reasons, but we get a lot of bats in players' hands coming through our shop here. We also have a batting cage here that is not open to the public, but it's open for guys if they want to swing different models, whatever. We'll have players from the Chihuahuas team, from the visiting team, that will come in here and hit on their own for hours if they want to. Kind of on their own, they know what they need to work on. So different ways to get, you know, bats in players' hands, but typically it starts with a sample.
Do you have a formal relationship with the Chihuahuas, or is just an informal relationship with them?
Just an informal relationship. You know, things happen in different ways. Their bus, they were driving back from Albuquerque, I think it was last year, maybe the year before. And the bus drove through this huge puddle, and like literally all their luggage got wet underneath the bus. And a couple of the players didn't have bats. It's like, "Hey, can we get a couple bats right away?" Sure. You know, we take good care of them. And, you know, it's a two-way street. They take great care of us.
I just want to say, just coincidence, a couple of podcasts ago, we had on Tim Haggerty, the voice of the Chihuahuas. So I just want to throw that out.
Tim is a great friend. And for everyone listening, if you haven't got his new book, you need to get your hands on his new book. It's awesome. And Tim's a very, very talented guy.
Absolutely. And everybody listen to episode 187 if you want to hear the Tim Haggerty interview.
Okay, you got it. I definitely will later today. Okay. You know, I do a lot of the bat making myself here. And so I'm constantly listening to different things. So definitely will give that a listen this evening as we're turning some more bats.
Okay. That's exactly what I was going to say, Jeff, because I just listened to the episode today. And what is the name of the book? It's 1001.
Mm-hmm. Crazy Minor League Baseball Stories or something.
Yeah, like yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I just listened to that today. So that's oddly enough. But, well, you know, the San Antonio Missions here in San Antonio are the AA affiliate of the Padres.
They have been to San Antonio a couple times. And I tell you what, San Antonio is going to have some very, very talented players very soon, if not this year, next year, come up through that team. Padres are stacked, got some really young, very, very talented players.
Oh, like good.
Dallas, who made his debut last night.
Okay. Yeah. And the San Antonio Mission, the team got purchased and they're going to build by some wealthy businessmen in San Antonio. And so now they're going to move out of Nelson Wolf Stadium and move to a new location in downtown San Antonio. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I don't think you'll have anyone complain about that. that stadium's a little rough. You know, and we were talking about El Paso being a great place to make bats, but it's also a great place to play. So a couple of things, the humidity is very, very low here. So a lot of bat manufacturers spend a lot of time and energy taking humidity out of the air in order to keep their billets dry. Billets, the piece of wood is called a billet, and it's dried to 8% moisture content in the kilns before they're sent to us as bat manufacturers. So when you're making bats like, let's say, a Marucci or someone like that who's in Louisiana, you can just imagine the amount of water they have to pull out of the air to try to keep the weight of the bat, you know, true to what it comes from the mill. We in El Paso, we actually pump at this time of year, right now before the monsoon season starts, we're pumping moisture into the area to keep the moisture between 20 and 30%. But it is a great place to make bats because it is so dry. It's also at about 3,500 feet altitude. So the ball flies here. So when players come here to play, they love the way the ball flies. Mm-hmm. Not to mention we have, I think one of the, and I've been to a lot of minor league ballparks, one of the finest minor league ballparks in the country here in El Paso. They did it right.
Yeah, Tim was telling us about that as well.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure you only make wood bats, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we only make wood bats. So we make them out of maple, ash, and birch. Mm-hmm. Are the three types of wood. About 87% of what we make is maple. About 11%, 12% is birch. And then the 1-2% is ash.
Why is it so heavily that way?
So in the late 80s, Sambat, who still makes a fine bat, they're out of Canada, they introduced maple. And at the time, everything was ash. And they introduced maple bats to Joe Carter and Barry Bonds. And imagine where that went.
Right.
It's a much more dense wood. So it's harder. So the ball, you know, really takes off after that, you know, off a maple bat. The sound is a little different, a little crisper. It just came into popularity. So when you have someone like Barry Bonds swinging a brand new type of species of wood, I mean, what do you think everyone's going to want to swing? You know, everyone wants Barry Bonds. So that really took off. Interestingly, around the same time that there was an invasive beetle that's impacting the ash tree. And so that's killing the ash tree. You know, maple's kind of taken off. And birch is a relatively emerging species for bats. It's almost as dense as maple is, but it still has a little bit of the flexibility that ash has. So we have a lot of James Outman, for example. I was just texting him a couple weeks ago, and we had made some birch, maple and birch. And he called me, he's like, man, these birch are super hard. And he went off in Chicago a couple weeks ago and for a couple home runs and grand slams, and that was a birch bat. And so, you know, we're converting. I think some players are converting to birch as well. And even someone like Manny Machado, who occasionally will swing ash just to, you know, he's feeling a little, you know, something going on in his swing, and he'll try something different, you know, for a series, maybe game two, whatever it may be.
Now, it said hard maple. Is that different than the normal maple tree? I mean, is it a specific variety of the tree?
Yes, there's different species of tree. So there's a couple of terminology. It's kind of like fishing. If you're fishing around the world, there's a tuna is called something different if you're in Costa Rica versus Mexico versus the United States, or
Dorado, mahi mahi, whatever.
Exactly. So hard maple, rock maple, sugar maple, that's all the same exact species of wood.
And it is. Okay.
One that's approved. The species of wood have to be approved by Major League Baseball. You can't.
Oh.
I get calls, random calls. I got a call after we were on a different program, and someone said, hey, I have a huge ash tree that I'm cutting down in my house. I want to sell it to you. You know, I can't do that. But, you know, people want to make baseball bats out of all different types of wood. but the species has to be approved by Major League Baseball.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah. I guess you can't pull a Roy Hobbs and make your own bat and say.
Well, you can. It just has to be out of a certain species of wood. If you have an ash tree or a yellow birch tree or a sugar maple tree, you know, you can make it out of those for sure.
I want to ask you, you have a website where you sell your models and you can actually build your own bat.
Yep.
And I'm asking something a little bit technical because I don't understand it. You can select your model, your wood type. You were talking maple, birch, ash. You can select your size. But what is bat drop?
So the what's typically referred to as the drop is the difference in between the inches in the bat and the weight in ounces. So if you have a 34-31, that's 34 inches, 31 ounces. That's the other big difference in youth baseball. You know, when kids are very, very young, they'll swing a drop 10, which is, you know, let's just say it's a 27 inch bat that only weighs 17 ounces. So obviously with different alloys and composites, you can make a very light bat, you know, made out of different types of metals. With wood, God made the tree. It is the weight that the density is a little different in, you know, species of wood as well. So all the billets that you see behind me are all the same length. They're all the same diameter. But each one weighs, you know, in ounces unique to that particular tree. Just as it grows, maybe wide growth rings, narrow growth rings, those types of things. Each tree is unique and each billet is unique. So we kind of look at each one. And so what you have to know, like you said, a drop, what's a drop? So if a drop 3 is kind of your standard drop class, I guess, for a wood bat, we know that if I'm going to make CJ Abrams his bat, I know that starts with an 88 ounce billet and I'm going to get a 34 inch, 32 ounce maple bat with a cup. And the cup is that bored out end of the barrel. That also changes how a bat feels to a player. When you cup a bat, it feels more balanced, not as end loaded. When you cup, you're taking weight from out of the end of the bat. So that changes how the bat feels to a player. Also obviously changes the weight. You're taking mass out of the end of the bat.
What's the margin on the 8% moisture? There's a device that you use, because I know some barbecue people actually, they like an 8 to 10 to 12% moisture on the wood that they use for their barbecue. So what's the margin of
they say
to be within a 1% or something? Or
there's no, since everyone gets their wood, MLB, I'm talking MLB here, right?
So sure. Okay.
Specifications. They say that the moisture content needs to be between 8 and 12%. So there's...
Oh, there you go. 8 and 12.
There's probably a 2 to 3% variability in the way it comes, you know, one billet to the other on the same pallet. I would say maybe 3% at the most. And then really it depends on the environment in which you store your billets here. So we pay very close attention to the temperature and the humidity in the room where the wood is stored.
Interesting. Does MLB have an inspector there at that facility then? That's kind of periodically, you know, or sporadically checking some of the billets.
That's another kind of, I guess, great advantage of being in El Paso. It's kind of off the beaten track. So we don't have the inspector come through El Paso, and he hasn't yet. Knock on wood.
I'm thinking at the place up in upstate New York where all the wood comes from. But
you know what? Yeah. It's a great question. I don't know if he's ever been there. When you are part of your, you know, application, every year we have to apply and pay a fee, of course. But you have to agree to say, hey, you know, if we want to come inspect your facility, we can do it.
Right.
And so, yeah, they can come in and check us out whenever they want.
Well, I wanted to ask this question, and sorry, Jeff, but as a Cubs fan, and you know, there was a history with bats that had corks in them the end of them. What would that do? What advantage would that be to someone that would do that?
Yeah. So basically you're taking a weight out of the bat. So the bat becomes lighter. When the bat becomes lighter, it becomes faster to swing.
Yep.
So your swing speed will increase. I don't think that it would make that big of a difference. You still need mass, right, to drive the ball. You can't swing a foam bat and expect the ball to go anywhere. It's super light. You can swing it fast, but you need mass to drive the ball. So in theory, it makes the bat lighter. You replace it with cork, so it's not hollow. It doesn't sound, you know, hollow.
Okay.
But, you know, I think the easier way to do that would be just to use a less dense piece of wood and try to do it. If you find a bat maker to cheat the system that way.
Yeah, but I didn't know if it would have some little bit of a trampoline effect to it as the ball would hit it. So,
It's a good question. And that came up when, in order to become a bat supplier, you have to go through a 3-day training at the U.S. Forest Service Laboratory in Wisconsin. And we talked to some incredibly smart people there. One of them was a forensic botanist. Over a couple of beers that night, we were talking and he said the amount of time that the ball is in contact with the bat, there's really nothing that you can do with the species of wood that would make a difference. Like if you painted it or you did this coating or you did that, it won't have an impact on the, on how far the bat will go. I think it is more about swing speed and where you hit the ball, where on the bat you hit the ball that will determine, you know, how far it goes.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. I want everybody to check out overflysports.com. You can get your custom bat there. You can go to town here. You have wide selection of colors for the handle, the barrel, the logo. I mean, it's really fascinating. You can have personalized. This is just a great way. It makes a great gift. It's not that expensive, so it's just terrific. And I would encourage everybody to go there. Do you have any other social media that you'd like to plug?
Yeah, they can follow us on Instagram. Is probably the best way to do it at Overfly Sports. Completely customized, like you talked about, colors, logos, engravings, anything you want. You know, we can make it happen. Probably the craziest thing we've ever made in terms of a bat was we had a pro player whose father had passed away and asked us to make a bat, and he encapsulated part of his father's ashes in the end of the bat. So kind of like corking a bat, Doug, you talked about that. Same concept, except part of his dad's ashes now lives in one of our bats.
And I saw this past Mother's Day, you had a bat with a picture of I guess it was Lars newborn and his mom on there. So on the knob of the bat.
Yeah, we've had quite a history of press in terms of knob stickers, almost as much as our bats, to be honest. CJ Abrams, who was with the Padres organization and came through El Paso, he had for a season last year, he had a picture of he and his dad on his knob stickers. And then that's what gave us the idea. And so this year for Mother's Day, we asked our pro players that we worked with if they wanted to, you know, honor their mom by putting a nice picture of their favorite picture of their mom on their knob, other bat. Yeah, everyone, you can use pink bats for that particular day. And we wanted to make it a little extra special. So Lars put a picture of he and his mom on there. Hassan Kim had a picture of he and his mom on his. We did it for James Altman. Had a great when James texted me the picture he wanted. You know, Lars was a professional picture, him in his Cardinals jersey with his mom. James Altman sent me a picture when he was probably, I don't know, a year old. So to see Altman, you know, with kind of red hair being a baby and compared to now was kind of funny. But we try to do those kinds of things. Those are some of the fun things that we get to do in working with these guys. I know the struggles that they've gone through to get to be where they are. And again, having two boys myself, I know the lengths that my wife goes through to clean the baseball pants and take them to practice and do all those things. So if we could do something special for the moms out there for Mother's Day, you know, we try to do that.
That's nice.
I saw that you also had some bats with the hashtag El Paso Strong, and obviously here in San Antonio, Uvalde Strong as well and stuff. Yeah. I appreciate those sort of things. I have two more questions before we kind of wrap things up. Number one, have you targeted the senior leagues? Because I know they always have the World Series there in Arizona. So that seems like maybe that would be a, because I presume they use wood bats, unlike, you know, mid, let's say college, which uses aluminum.
Yeah, we have not targeted that. But quite honestly, I guess it's been a good problem for us to have, is just trying to keep up with the demand that we've had. And it just seems like whether it's, you know, the Mexican league or the minor leagues here or the Korean leagues and these kind of markets emerging, we've just kind of grown organically that way without a lot of, you know, proactive, I would say, kind of sales and a retail presence. You know, our retail presence is limited to our website. We don't work with any of the big box stores or anything like that yet.
Right.
Maybe one day we'll be able to do that, but. I think there's lots of opportunity in like those senior leagues and those kinds of things.
Interesting. I was actually at a Cardinals, two Cardinals games this weekend up in Cleveland. And saw New Bar, but they had Louisville Slugger had a booth set up, and they were actually making bats on site. So I didn't know if that was kind of common. So
it's not common. That's kind of unique. I didn't know that they were doing that. Louisville Slugger has a little bit of a different relationship with MLB.
Yeah. I've got a picture of it. I'll try to send it to you through Instagram and send you a picture of that, because it caught my eye. And so my last question relates to Instagram. I saw, and I don't know if you're a Texas Aggie, but you were at the Dixie Chicken with your son, Will, checking out the baseball team, hopefully. And I'm sorry he didn't go to A&M.
Yeah, my wife's an Aggie, so she was heartbroken. Okay. But he spent a year at Blinn, which is not far. He spent a lot of time, probably too much time at the Dixie Chicken and the other bars there. But A&M is, my wife being an Aggie, we try to go back whenever we can. It's a great place and a huge, great baseball environment.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, your son chose Virginia Commonwealth, I think, is VCU, right?
That's correct, yeah. So he left Sunday. We said goodbye to him. He's playing summer ball out there, and then he'll go to VCU for the last 2 years of his career.
Oh, no kidding. Jeff's son was at Arizona State.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a student manager all 4 years, and he just finished up. And unfortunately, ASU did not make the regionals, but he had a great time and lots of relationships, and you know, became friends with you know, one of the guys that Spencer Torkelson. So you know,
yeah, not too a lot bad, of huh? great. You know, Phoenix is a great market. I spend a lot of time. My youngest son plays on a team out of Phoenix area, so we're in Phoenix. Whether it's for his team or the bat business, I'm in that market probably twice a month. And you between obviously spring training, extended spring training, rehab assignments, the fall league, and now the you know, the CBA allows the players to go to the complex anytime during the off season. There are always players in the Phoenix market, even those that don't spring train there. They're it's just a great city and so many resources there. It's so much more. Growing up in Florida, I can say it's so much more convenient because the players, everyone's so close together.
Right, you know, right.
Florida's more spread out. It's harder to get around.
Definitely. Well, Kurt, we want to thank you for your time. We really learned a lot about the bat business. I mean, this was a fascinating conversation. You think bats, but this was really great speaking to you about it. So we appreciate your time. Check out overflysports.com and order your bats.
Yeah, you know? We appreciate it. Thank you so much. We need to come back on and talk barbecue. I don't know what I thought we were going to talk brisket and all of that kind of stuff.
Oh, you know what? Let's keep the recording going. Doug is the brisket king.
I love brisket. In fact, I've got two briskets in a cooler. I'm headed to a cook-off this weekend for the Texas Rangers, not the baseball team, kind of like the Texas Rangers officers, the FBI division of the here. So I've got two on ice right now. So yeah, what kind of grills do you have? This is like when Steve Traxel or Howard Johnson were on.
Exactly.
They wanted to talk some overtime. And
so I'll tell you, I almost got divorced over this, but I had a little too much to drink one night, and I was with some friends, and he had introduced me, or he had just bought a Rectech. And so I was like, okay, what, tell me about this. And before, you know, I think after the second bottle of whiskey or something, I made that investment, of course, without telling my wife, because she would never have agreed to do it. But that turned out to be, and she'll tell you, she probably, I don't know if it's, she probably uses the grill as much as I do, but that was a huge game changer for me with the Wi-Fi connections and the probes, and being able to, when I'm here at the shop working or whatever, I can be checking, what's on the grill. I can start it up so it's ready to go by the time I get home. All that kind of stuff is great. So I do enjoy that. And probably my favorite thing is a brisket, I guess, from Texas. It's you've probably heard that a million times, but brisket's my go-to.
Absolutely. I was just at Memphis in May giving classes for Home Depot and one of my classes was brisket. So, but we'll agree to still remain friends and agree to disagree. I'm actually an instructor for Traeger. So,
okay, there you go.
The pellet cooker, I mean, I believe the first competition cook to use, pellet cookers here in Texas. So, but yeah, I love to cook brisket and I'll message you on Instagram and because I do a lot of different Instagram things, and I do a Meet Me on Monday where I try to do a different type of meat that is a little different, because we all get in our ruts of cooking, so yeah. I cook brisket a lot. You must cook brisket a lot and other, try to cook some other things.
For sure. And back to bat making, one of the, I guess, byproducts of the waste that we have is obviously the sawdust. So each billet weighs, like between, let's say, 86 ounces and 100 ounces, right, that we get. You figure the bat weighs between 30 ounces and 32 ounces, let's say. So we're discarding, two-thirds of what we start with. And that's either in two forms. It's either in sawdust or it's in chunks, kind of like this. And so the sawdust we recycle. Actually, here we work with a number of different nurseries and farmers, and they take the sawdust and they use it as compost in their soil to help retain the moisture. But we don't do anything with this. And so I've used it to smoke. I have another old school smoker. So sugar maple and birch and even ash are great to smoke with. And so I've done briskets and stuff with these chunks. But I need to, I worked on something called Major League Chunks. I thought that was a clever name, but I need, we have bags and bags and bags of these types of things that, just we're out remotely in El Paso that I don't know what to do with them. Help me find a way to get rid of these things, hockey puck style chunks that can be used for something.
Major League barbecue chunks or something. Yeah,
that's it. So there you go.
That's actually interesting. That's a good use of it though. To you must have an offset type smoker to use it on something.
Exactly. So yeah, you were talking about like the moisture content of the chunks of wood and those types.
Right. Right. So you don't want too much water in it.
Yeah. So these are going to be right around that 8 to 10% moisture content. So. And then if you want more, obviously you can soak them or you can treat them however you want. But, it's right here.
Like Meathead says, even if you soak them, it's not going to really, get that much moisture in, maybe just in the outer part and stuff. So what other types of things do you like? Are there some things that are common in El Paso, I know they maybe picanha or tri-tip or something.
Yeah. So we do a lot of like skirt steak and those types of things, the arachetta steaks and that flavor.
Arachetta. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic on the grill. We usually marinate it in like a Shinerbach and lime, marinate that overnight. That's always great in tacos. So anything that you can either eat it by itself or put it in like little street tacos action is always great. The other thing we really like to do, just me and my family, and I think the more people I talk to, if they're into grilling, they have a version of it. We just take the tortillas, a little olive oil, throw it on the grill, put some grilled like barbecue chicken on it, some cheese right on the tortilla, make like a little pizza right on the grill. And, when you make some great grill, some veggies, bell peppers and whatever, else you like to put on there, a little cheese, little barbecue pizza or a little barbecue chicken, cilantro and some cayenne pepper. And that's outstanding as well. So those are kind of our go-tos.
Well, I like the Shiner Bock, the beer with the attitude, which is Texas based. So that's a big beer down here. So, do you do anything like the barbacoa or beef cheeks or anything like that? Have you started doing that?
You know what? I used to work on a kind of weekend cowboy stuff on a ranch, and I tend to stay away from that and that kind of stuff. So,
okay.
No, I'll stick with the mainstay kind of cuts.
I gotcha. All right.
Just the family, I think, love to grill. And El Paso's great weather all the time. So
a little windy there.
Sometimes a couple months, maybe March and March, April, a little bit, and October for sure. That's all right. It blows the smoke away. So it's even better.
Yeah.
Well, Kurt, again, we thank you for your time. Fascinating conversation, and we appreciate it. And, you know, like I said, go to overflysports.com and order your bat.
Great. Thank you so much, Jeff, Doug. It's been a pleasure. Always love talking baseball and barbecue too. So appreciate the time and the energy here. And it's great meeting you guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on. Thank you.
Take care.
And we'd like to thank Kurt Gross for joining us on Baseball and BBQ. And special thanks to Doug Scheiding. Leonard, you heard the interview. What'd you think?
I told you before, because I got the opportunity. You know, I know someone. I knew someone who let me listen to it before we put it on the show. And listening to it again, I get to hear the nuances. You and Doug are great together, and I'm a little worried.
Oh, I can't afford Doug, so don't worry about it.
Okay. Thankfully, Doug is expensive, so that's good. But
you work cheap.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I pay you.
Yes, I know, right?
But I want to thank everybody who joined us on this show. The Grill Sisters, of course, Desi and Irene. I mean, they came to us from a long way. And then Doug and Kurt Gross and you, Jeff, and Bet Online. It is where the game starts. Jeff, we're not starting.
No, we're not.
We're ending
with the poet
Shel Krakowski
and the musician
Dave Dresser
and the song
Baseball Always Brings You Home. Baseball.